Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for holding on. Once again, I'd like to tell you this broadcast is dedicated to my son-in-law who died about 1:50 a.m. yesterday morning. Joseph Pio Scola. I loved him just like my biological son. I couldn't have loved him anymore. And I'm telling you, it was really, really hard. He died a really hard death. So keep him in your prayers. We got Sister Monica's holding over because there's a few bits of information she couldn't get in that first hour. We've had a lot to get through tonight. Sister Nancy's hanging on. And we also have my brother, everybody's friend, Gene, the bitter ender Andrews. He's going to come on tonight, and he's going to get stuff. We're going to kind of preview from now on. You know, February is Dresden Month, Holocaust Exposing Month. Anything to Germany month, everything to do with German. March is going to be white history / Confederate history, and it's going to bump right into TPC after our show. You will get more of that because we cannot talk about white people enough. Maybe every show we can talk about this day in history, so-and-so like Thomas Edison, Jenner, the guy who invented penicillin. I was told the other night, let's see, 95% of all the patents in the world have been produced by white people. But anyway, before we go to Gene, we've got Miss Monica staying over to tell some stuff that she couldn't get to, and so is Nancy. We're gonna kind of finish the second hour on the first segment of the third hour. Then we're gonna go to Gene Andrews, aka the Bitter Ender. Go ahead, Miss Monica.
Yeah, well, Nancy made a very good point during the break and said I hadn't really clearly stated what is Philip Hassler in jail for, and aka Mr. Bond. People might recognize that name if they listen to, I think I would call it rap. But it's basically for the way he writes it, to utter the wrong mouth noises. Okay, so he is very wide awake about the Jewish problem and what they are doing to us, and you know that they're trying to exterminate us, etc., etc., and that everything in the world is basically inverted. And he actually speaks about it or raps about it. Like, yeah, so he puts these wrong mouth noises into his. And he said that in a letter. I laughed out loud when I read that. I love the way he writes. He's just a wonderful guy. But yeah, he was talking about how, you know, these people that get praised for their democracy and freedom of speech, this beacon of liberty, you know, they always talk about Israel. Oh, they're the beacon of liberty, and how they treat a subject who happens to utter the wrong mouth noises. And that would be Philip Hassler. And then his brother, I did mention this one, he got 4 years for that website, Judas Watch, that just basically pointed out the facts with sources, with, you know, documentation of what are the facts. But that certain group of people doesn't like it when we point out the facts. In fact, they have a word for it. They call it hate speech. That's what they call it. That's what I was charged with, my brother was charged with, and many, many other political prisoners are charged with these days, is hate speech. And these days they're adding all kinds of things to these hate speech laws, like, and now it's becoming this generic term called denialism. It's something they're trying to introduce, add that to the Canadian criminal code. In our hate speech law is now it's going to be residential school denialism, and they've got all kinds of other denialisms in there, like climate denialism and vax denialism, and of course the Holocaust denialism. So they're trying to add many aspects to these hate speech laws, basically narrowing the scope of what we are permitted to speak about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it.
That's
and true. I think, Nancy, we were mentioning also to Vincent Renoir, who I did talk about in the previous hour, and Nancy read out a letter from him. He wrote me a nice, very short letter, just a real nice thing here, with a little drawing. Maybe it was similar to the drawing you got, a mountain with a sunrise, and he calls it the revisionist sunrise there. So, yeah. Yeah, he says something about, well, I started my letter in French and then went over to English. So he remarks about that. He thanks me for my letter. And then he says, English is an international language. So if I was a person who speaks, whoops, sorry, let me just unplug that. Okay, I've got that unplugged. That's a loud noise. Sorry about that. If I was a person who speaks English, I would make no effort to speak another language. And then he says, I drew for you this revisionist sun arising. And then he responds to something that I said. I said to him that soon the whole world will know that you are right. I said that to him, and he says, well, I'm not sure that soon the whole world will know revisionists are right, but never mind. I made my duty telling the truth and fighting for national socialism, the hope for the future. I shall be thanked for that by God when I die. All the best from Vincent. So, yeah, I think he's in good spirits. That Nancy kind of indicated that last week. Probably it would be best if he does not get extradited to France, because apparently in France the prison conditions are not so pleasant, I guess. And mm-hmm. in Scotland, I think you indicated that he was at least being well. Well, I mean, all things considered, well cared for in the prison system. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, I thought his card to me was very French. I had a girlfriend when I was in England, and his letter reminded me a lot of her. Just very positive, and he ended up with Carpe Diem. It's the way I live now. In other words, just seize the day, and he didn't seem to be terrible. I'm sure he's upset. He was on the lam, actually. He was living in a Scottish fishing village for 2 years. Well, he was in England for 2 years. I don't know if he was at that village for 2 years. But he was hiding, basically, from the French occupiers who were searching for him. And I guess he'll be extradited to France for at least a couple years. I think they've got two different indictments against him. But
they have a special law there, a special law which they made specifically for Robert Faurisson, the gay sot. It's got another name too. It's a hyphenated name. I forgot the other part. Do you remember that, Nancy?
No, but I know what you're saying. Gay sot, yeah. There is some kind of special ruling. Yeah. But he has been, from what I can gather from just reading a little bit about his life. Now, he's been a big writer. He has written many books. And he's been a National Socialist really since he was quite young. He's been very, very active in France, and he's been arrested more than, this is not the first time he's been arrested, but this, he didn't want to spend any more time in prison. I think at least 2 more years, maybe more. I think he's got 2 different indictments. But I think since he has written to us, shall I give the address that I have for him?
Yes.
Okay, if someone out there would like to write to him, he's a very pleasant person. Vincent Renaud, the last name is Reynouard. That's Reynouard. He's HM, I've got HM Prison, HM Prison, Edinburgh. And 33.
Also, I'll just interject, but mm-hmm. you should also include the prisoner number.
I've got it right here. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, that is, I've got it right here. It's 160071. 160071. That's his number. HM Prison, Edinburgh. 33 Stenhouse. That's Stenhous Road, Edinburgh. This is the number of the, like a zip code, EH113LN, United Kingdom. That's his current address.
What was that, EH what now, Nancy?
EH113LN.
Okay.
That's Edinburgh, Scotland, or United Kingdom. I don't think they want to be part of United Kingdom.
That postal code, I'll just give it with the, like, Echo Hotel 11, then a space, 3, Lima, November, just so that
people can catch
it.
Way to go.
Yeah.
That's great.
So anyway, these are some of the current revisionists, and of course, Julian Assange was mentioned by Democracy Now. Of course, it's a liberal front, but they do protest quite a bit against the mistreatment of the Palestinians, which is the reason I liked Democracy Now. But they talked about this anti-war protest. I wish someone would call in, and if they know how many people were actually present. I have limited information. I've not been able to get much except on YouTube. Nothing on the mass media at all about the protest. They did mention that this protest was in support of Julian Assange. You talk about someone who's been abused by the system. He's an Australian, and we want to bring him over to this country. And actually, we've tried to assassinate him. I think we set up – there were secret efforts to try to assassinate him while he was in the Venezuelan – Panamanian? One of the South American embassies for 7 years. We wanted to try to assassinate him in London. Now we want to bring him over here and let him die in prison. It's just the treatment for Julian Assange has been absolutely unbelievable.
That is, the government has never really come out and charged him, I don't think, formally, except some type of terrorism or leaking important documents, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, people. Miss Monica's leaving right now. We're going to come back with Gene, the Bitter Ender Andrews. We got some exciting news we're going to tell you about. Be right back.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA.org.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Dear Blood River Radio family, listen, you need to pay really close attention to this nice program, and you need to pay really close attention, especially in the third hour on March 4th, 11th, 18th and 25th, because we're having a college-level course that's going to be taught by a resident history professor, Dr. Gene Bitter Ender Andrews. And listen, people, if you pay attention to all these classes, and there's going to be a class tonight, too, he's going to give. If you pay attention, and at the end of the course, sometime in April, if you'll write, you've got 30 days to write an essay on a select number of topics that Professor Gene will give. And if you make an 80 or better, you'll give a Bachelor of Science degree in history. If you make a 90 or better, we'll give you a doctorate. And I've guaranteed to you, it will be better than any history course you can get from any school in the United States of America. You'll know more after the first course of true history than any place else in the world. And with that, the bitter ender has got to talk about something else tonight. And although this isn't April yet, although this isn't March, what he's talking about tonight, this is going to be one of the subjects you can write your essay on. So go ahead, Professor.
Well, we'll forgive their student loans before we ever get started. You know, like the government wants to do. Of course, the taxpayers are going to pick up the tab for it. You know, you yes. run up whatever kind of bill you want, and then
it's going to be a hell of a bill.
Your student loan debt, and the taxpayers will pick it up. No, I thought since we're in February, I always consider that Confederate History Month. Now I know we've had another History Month passed off on us that we're supposed to observe, but. I consider February because in February of 1861, that's when the Confederate government was set up in Montgomery, Alabama, and they had representatives from the seven states met there. They set up a government. They elected a president, vice president. They printed money, printed postage stamps, and they adopted a constitution, and they came up with a flag. So here's some of the things they did. First of all, well, they printed money. And if you have any authentic Confederate money today, it is worth about seven times the face value. So if you have a $5 bill that is authentic, it's worth at least $35 to $40, and a 20 is way on up there in the $140 to $50 to $60 range. And there are very few of them, but if you have a Confederate $100 bill, you're looking at over $1,000, and which is a lot more valuable than the Yankee money that we have today. And they printed postage stamps. This is something interesting. John Regan was a postmaster general who was on the cabinet of Jefferson Davis. He's from Gatlinburg, Tennessee, but had moved to Texas and known pretty much as a Texan. But they used to have a historical marker on the main street in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, about John Regan and postmaster general of the Confederacy. But, of course, they've had to take it down and shuffle it off way back in a park where most people can't see it. You can't have that in the tourist trap like Gatlinburg. But the cool thing was the Confederate Postal Service operated through 4 years of war at a profit, and they never had to go back to Congress and ask for a bailout. Now, the service, as more and more of the South was overrun by the enemy and railroads were attacked and destroyed or broken down, the service wasn't that great in the last couple of years of the war, but still they did operate at a profit. They elected a president, Jefferson Davis of Mississippi, vice president Alexander Stevens of Georgia. And this was another interesting thing they did. They set the government up as a provisional government for a one-year trial. So Jefferson Davis, his first year in office, he was provisional president of the Confederate States of America. And everybody in the government, the cabinet, the upper-level government people, and generals and above in the army, they had a provisional one-year trial. And at the end of that year, their commission as a general officer or as president automatically ended. And then if someone wasn't doing too well, and they called this general in and said, well, you know, we appreciate your effort, but we really think you'd be better as running the button manufacturing plant down in Bumfuzzle, Georgia. I think that's your calling for the war. And they didn't have to have a court martial, and they didn't have to impeach a president or any of the government officials. Their term automatically ended after 1 year. So that's why you see on the Confederate seal, the Great Seal of the Confederacy, it has February 22nd, 1862, and that's when the permanent government of the Confederate States was put in place, not 1861. And then by that time, they'd moved the capital to Richmond. And also on the Confederate seal, it has the equestrian statue of George Washington, which is on the Capitol grounds in Richmond, I think, unless they've torn it down. And then, of course, the Latin motto on the seal says, Deo Vindici, God vindicates. So a lot of this was set up early on, And one of the cool things they did, I think, was the Constitution that they came up with, because they had about 80 years to look at the original and say, well, you know, that was a good idea on paper, but it just didn't work out. So they were starting from scratch, and they didn't have to go through a lengthy amending process to change things in the Constitution. They just started with a blank sheet of paper and put down what they really thought would work. Most of it followed the original Constitution, but there were some very significant changes. First of all, they looked at the office of president and said, you know, this guy spends his last 2 years in office campaigning for the next four. We'll fix that. So they gave the president a six-year term, but you could only be president once, so you better get it right the first time. But they did give the president a byline veto. So if you had a bill that was very important for financing the military or financing, keeping the government running or whatever you needed to do, trade with England or whatever for war materials or supplies that were needed, you couldn't tack on a whole bunch of riders to that bill. So if they had an important bill and all of a sudden on the end of the bill was funding for the Senator Jackass Fogbound Memorial Outhouse, the president could go through and scratch that off and say, okay, you want to bring that up as a bill by yourself, you go ahead and do it, but you're not adding that on to an important bill to keep the government operating. So byline veto is important. Also in the Constitution, and they didn't have amendments to the Constitution like a Bill of Rights. That was included in the Constitution. But one of those things in the Constitution, the government had to have a balanced budget. And except in national emergencies, and that was defined as war or some kind of natural disaster. They just couldn't spend a lot of money on pork barrel projects or anything like that, like we do today, and just keep running up the budget and printing more and more money to try to cover it. Now, another thing that they did in the Constitution of the Confederate States, which the United States Constitution never did, it addressed the issue of slavery. And in the Confederate Constitution, it said that the question of slavery will be left up to the states or new territories coming in. If a new territory wanted to come in, Arizona, you know, wherever out west that they were looking at new territories, Kansas, the Dakotas, whatever, they could come in where slavery was prohibited, or they could come in and say slavery was legal in there. And it was up to the state or the new territory to decide it. And the federal government or the central government was not going to determine that. One other thing they had that was kind of different: they had no political parties, which, you know, we look at it today and it seems like most of the political parties spend all their time arguing and fighting with each other and never really getting anything done. That was the general intent, that they were trying to get away from that. But on the other hand, you never had a cohesive group that said, okay, this is what we stand for and this is what we're going to push for. And people that join this party, this is what they believe in. And people that join that party over there, then that's what they believe in. So they never really got a consensus of a large group in the Confederate Congress where they may have had political parties. What it broke down to, basically, there was a pro-Jefferson Davis group and there was an anti-Jefferson Davis group. And that was the factions that split along those lines in the Congress. So I thought that might be kind of interesting for our people for February. All this took place, like I said, in February of 1861. Jefferson Davis and the government officials, there were provisional terms, ended in February of 1862. And then that's where Jefferson Davis's first term, first and only term as president, six-year term, started in February of 1862. And of course, by that time, the capital had moved from Montgomery up to Richmond.
Gene, I tell you what, I'm glad I don't have to take that test. But anyway, people, I don't have no education. People, hold on. We're getting ready to go back to this course. I'll give you some more information when we come back. So hold on to your seat. Be right back.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA News, I'm Dave Collins. Former Vice President Pence is calling out some in his party as the one-year anniversary of the war between Russia and Ukraine has passed.
There can be no room in the leadership of the Republican Party for apologists for Putin. There can only be room for champions of freedom.
Vice President Pence at the University of Texas at Austin. Pence added the top goal is restoring peace quickly. He said the fastest way to get that done is helping Ukraine fight off the Russian invasion. President Biden on ABC talking about the needs of the Ukraine army to defeat Russia.
He needs tanks. He needs artillery. He needs air defense, including another HIMARS. There's things he needs now that we're sending him to put him in a position to be able to make gains this spring and this summer going into the fall.
Hundreds are taking part in a Washington, D.C. rally to mark the one-year anniversary of Russia invading Ukraine. President Biden's upcoming budget plan won't be used in negotiations over raising the debt ceiling. That's according to Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, who spoke to Reuters. Republican lawmakers have pushed Biden and Democrats to agree to spending cuts to win their votes to raise the cap. Yellen said negotiating over whether to pay the nation's bills isn't acceptable. The surprisingly winter weather continues in Southern California.
There is a blizzard warning still in effect for Southern California, which is shocking to many longtime residents.
I've lived in Los Angeles my whole life, and I haven't seen any snow since the late 50s when I was a kid.
Heavy snow and gusty winds can be expected in the Ventura and Los Angeles County mountains. This on the heels of Friday's torrential rains and flooding.
If we were just driving and then the car stopped.
That audio courtesy of KTLA. Up to a foot of snow could fall at elevations as low as 2,000 feet.
That's John Schaefer reporting. This is USA News.
Attention, small business owners. This could be the most important 10-minute call you will ever make. You may be eligible to receive up to $26,000 per employee through the Employee Retention Credit. Call Omega Accounting Solutions to see if your business is eligible to recover payroll tax pay during the pandemic. All it takes is a quick, easy, free 10-minute consultation to determine your qualifications. Call Omega Accounting Solutions at 800-309-ERC. Omega's knowledgeable staff will streamline the process of filing complicated paperwork. Omega is the small business champion with teams dedicated to maximizing tax credits. CPAs even turn to Omega for ERC guidance. Take advantage of this exclusive small business tax credit before it's too late. The 3-year sunset deadline is setting soon. So find out if you qualify today. Call 800-309-ERC. That's 800-309-ERC. Or visit OmegaTaxCredits.com.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some man you just can't reach.
Dear Blood River Radio family, listen, I'm really excited. I'm not kidding you. I'm really excited about this degree program. In the past, Gene is our resident. I mean, he's Mr. Confederate History. We're going to do Confederate History / White History, White American History. I mean, 95% of all patents that ever been done. You know, if they talk about these wonderful Japanese cars, well, guess who the hell invented the car in the first place? I mean, probably might not have been Henry Ford, but nobody made a car like Henry Ford. Then you came along, you had Walter Chrysler, who was just, he was an engineer, you know, people like that, and whoever started, you know, Chevrolet, et cetera, et cetera. But we'll talk about people like Edward Jenner, the guy who developed penicillin, and God only knows how many lives. That's saved. Alexander Graham Bell, and it's also said that Eliza Gray invented a telephone device about the same time he did. Antonio Mussini, people that developed all kinds of stuff in Italy with parallel time that, Eli Whitney came along. We have Morris, the guy who developed the Morse code. Each week of this month, it's going to be White History, Confederate History. And the reason we decided to do it like this, people, is because We have hours and hours of Confederate history, hours and hours of white history on Blood River Radio, but it's been scattered out all over 4 years. We're going on 5 years. But if you will pay attention, we're going to have a solid month. And instead of having to go over all these years of archives, you can mark this down as March of 2023, and you can learn just about any damn thing you want to know about Confederate history. And you'll also be able to learn all kinds of stuff about your ancestors' white history. And like I said, if you wish, you'll be have the opportunity to submit an essay with different grades, and the degree you will get will be signed by Professor Gene the Bitter Andrews and Assistant Professor Nancy Big Sister Hitt. And if you want me to, I can sign as I can be the guy, the custodian who sweeped the floors and stuff at the university. But anyway, so that's what we're going to do. We really want to do that. So anyway, we're going to go back. I think Gene said he wanted to go back to Miss Nancy because she wanted to talk about something. So anyway, go back to you, Miss Sister.
She had an excellent point during the break, and I think we need to put that out there. We were talking about the Confederate cabinet and the cabinet members. And Lincoln's cabinet, he did not want any Jews or any Catholics on the cabinet for the Lincoln government, and there weren't any. Didn't hold any high position in the Lincoln government. But Nancy, how about telling them who they had on the Confederate cabinet for Jefferson Davis's cabinet?
That's pretty bad.
Judah Benjamin, of course, was Jewish, and they had Reagan. You were just speaking about him. He was Catholic, and Mallory was apparently Catholic. And it's interesting. I had a run-in. I've done some research on my great-grandfather was studied leprosy. And I had some information from 1902 that actually mentioned Mallory down in Key West, that's where he was from, that there was leprosy down in Key West. That was in 1902. Now, I know I'm getting off a rabbit trail, but that's just another connection.
You're doing
great.
In
other words, they were open to, they were not biased against the Catholics, which kind of was common at that time. And then another thing I can pitch out is you mentioned the flag and the uniform were both designed by Nicolas Marshall, who was a native of Prussia.
Yes. It was a very, you know, they try to portray the South as just these people sitting around on the veranda of the plantation, sipping a mint julep in one hand and beating the darkies with the other hand. But it was a very, very cosmopolitan country. There was a lot of Spanish influence in the Florida Panhandle. Of course, in Louisiana, you had the Creoles. You had a lot of Spanish and Mexican influence in Texas. There were Confederate officers that were Hispanic. So it was, you know, and of course, you know, a lot of Europeans came over here and fought for us. Harris von Broek under Jeb Stuart, Patrick Claiborne here in Tennessee. So there were quite a few foreign nationals that served in the Confederacy, and people of foreign nationality, heritage, and background that were born here in the southern states that threw their lot in with the Confederacy because they'd grown up here. This was their home.
And
you know, an interesting point, the largest synagogue in the United States in 1860 was in Charleston, South Carolina.
Yeah. Well, look at Stan Waite. Waite, the Indian general, our Indian, Native American, was a Confederate general.
Absolutely. And then the five tribes of the Indian nations out when today's Oklahoma is the Indian nations back then, they threw their lot in with the Confederacy. Because they'd been screwed over by that federal government in Washington. They thought, well, maybe we'll get a better deal from this bunch of white cats.
Of
pale faces might be better.
You know, they got the shaft after the war
by
throwing their lot in with us or with the South. And, you know, there were Hispanic generals as well.
I just thought of a question. On the test, we can say, why were the Indians screwed over so bad by the Yankees after the war? See, I didn't know that. Now it makes sense why they hated the Indians so damn bad, because they fought with the Confederates. But anyway, that's great stuff. Anyway, I'm going to shut the hell up because y'all really got me excited about this course.
One other little thing to pass on to our listeners. We were talking about the formation of the Confederate government. They printed money, printed postage stamps. They set up, you know, the cabinet drafted a constitution, and they appointed a flag committee to come up with a flag for the new country. And a lot of the people on the flag committee said, why do we have to come up with a new flag? So we're defending the original constitution. It's the northern states that have broken away from it. They're actually the rebels. Why don't they come up with a new flag? Well, they knew that wasn't going to happen. So they threw it open to people all over the South to send in their ideas for designs for the flag. And some of them were pretty good. And some of them were, don't call us, we'll call you. I saw one design that had fish jumping out of the water and a palm tree in the sunset. Be great for a travel poster for Florida, but not really for a national flag. And one of the designs that was submitted was by a gentleman, William Porcher Miles of South Carolina. And it was a red flag with a blue diagonal cross on it and stars for the seven states on the arms of the flag. And this was known as the Southern Cross or the Celtic Cross or the Cross of St. Andrew, because Scottish flag has the diagonal cross on it. And there's been some argument about whether they really designed it after the Scottish flag or not. Didn't really matter, because people in the South knew what that diagonal cross meant. That was the Celtic Cross or the Scottish Cross or Cross of St. Andrew, who is a patron saint of Scotland. So they really didn't have to go out and explain that to people in the South. But the problem was in the Capitol building in Montgomery, when they cut it down to the final four or Sweet 16 or however many flags they had right at the end, they were going to vote on it. It was hard to balance seven states on four arms of the flag. That was kind of looked off balance or whatever. But what really killed it, they were hanging up vertically in the Senate chamber in the Capitol in Montgomery. And one of the senators said, saw this flag hanging up, and he said, well, I ain't vote for no flag. It looks like a pair of suspenders hanging up there. So that flag got the axe. And the flag they came up with was what is known as the first national flag of the Confederacy, which had a blue canton up in the upper left corner and a circle of seven stars, and then it had a red, white, and red stripe. And the flag committee made it look like the Revolutionary War flag on purpose, because they said this was the second independence movement in this country, the first against England. And they said, if the northern states won't leave us alone and let us go in peace, we'll have to fight the second war for independence, this time not against King George III of England, but against King Abraham I of the United States. So they had the circle of stars. So if you had 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, eventually 13, you could just make the circle bigger, and you didn't have to try to balance it out on anything. And the other point is, this flag was known as the Stars and Bars, because it had the stars in the circle and the red, white, red stripe, the bars across there. Now, all the news nerds today, they call the battle flag with the diagonal cross. They say, controversy over the stars and bars, details at 6. And they show the battle flag, and they call that the Stars and Bars. So if you hear them doing that, you know right off the bat they don't know what they're talking about. So that was the first national flag. Now, state militias and all the units being organized all over the South had all types of different flags. One of them was used as a single white star on a blue field, a bonnie blue flag. That was used a lot, especially troops coming from Texas and Louisiana. But the problem they ran into was in the first big land battle of the war, that we will open the shots at First Manassas right after the break.
Well, we're going to open those shots for sure after this break, folks. Be right back.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
This is Attorney Jason Rupp, General Counsel of the Knights Party based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people in our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Small Business Tech Guys is a team of experts ready to assist you with any service relating to growing your business. Our team specializes in information and technology, social media, general consulting, and HR. We thrive on assisting startup entrepreneurs with growing their businesses. If it's small business, it's our cup of tea. To schedule your free discovery call today, consider sbtechguys.com. We keep an eye on tech, so you don't have to. sbtechguys.com.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force!
Naked, merciless force, that's what I've always said. You know, you're wasting your time voting, wasting your time writing these letters. I say, like Sister Nancy said, the only thing these suckers understand is tar and feather. And that's what we're going to start doing. We're going to start tar and feather these worthless SOBs. But before we do that, though, we're going to give, before we go to war, we're going to go, give this month of April. If you've heard some heavy-duty stuff already, people. I have no clue what they're talking about most of the time. But Professor Gene, the Bitter Ender Andrews, and his sister, Professor Nancy, big sister hit. My brain is hurting trying to keep up with what they're talking about. I'm just need to go more edumacation, but I'm going to get as much edumacation as you people are because I'm learning stuff new every second. Who do we go to? Sister Nancy? I forgot who was talking. I've been running my mouth so much.
During the break, Nancy brought up a good point of why they had to change the first national flag. Mm-hmm. And we had talked about that with the blue canton in the corner and the circle of stars and the red, white, and red stripe. Looked great when they were waving it at the train depot when the boys were leaving for the war or flying from the post office or one of the government buildings. But, Nancy, what happened to the flag at Battle of First Manassas in July of 1861?
Confused with the American flag and possibly seen as a flag of surrender.
If it were hanging limp on the flagpole and you saw this red, white, and blue or smoke and dust on the battlefield, you're right. It did look too much like the U.S. flag. Mm-hmm. So the government decided, okay, we'll keep that for the government flag. And we'll go back to that flag that Mr. Miles came up with during the Constitution or the government convention in Montgomery. That was the red flag and had the blue diagonal stripes on it. Well, now they had six more states that had voted to leave the Union. So now you had 13 stars, which balance out on four arms of the flag plus one in the middle. So that took care of the flag or the star problem. And the Confederate battle flag, as that was known, was a military flag. And it didn't look anything at all like a U.S. flag. So it wouldn't be confused on the battlefield with who's that coming over the hill over there in the distance? Is that a friendly or an enemy unit coming up mm-hmm. on us? And so that was why they adopted that flag right there for the military. And the first national flag, the blue canton, the red, white, and red stripes, stayed as the government flag. So it flew from the Capitol buildings and, you know, all the government facilities and everything until 1863. And the battle flag became so popular that they decided, Congress voted to change the national flag. And they took the blue canton out of the corner, and they put the battle flag in the corner. And then with two red stripes and a red corner up in the upper left corner, they thought they had too much red on it. So they took the two red stripes off, and now the second national flag had the battle flag up in the upper left corner and an all-white rest of the field of the flag. And as you had mentioned, is known as the stainless banner. And unfortunately, the first time it was officially used by the government, it covered the casket of Stonewall Jackson when he was brought back to Lexington to be buried after he died from pneumonia and the wounds he had suffered at Chancellorsville. Mm-hmm. But and then what was the problem they had with the second national flag? Nancy, you were talking about that because of all the white?
Because so almost totally white. Yes, the stainless battle flag. Yeah, the stainless Confederate flag, yes.
So you're exactly right. And the same problem with the first national flag, if it's hanging limp on the flagpole, it looked too much like a flag of surrender or flag of truce. So the government, the Confederate government was practical. You know, they look at the situation and say, okay, we got to change this. This is not going to work. In March of 1865, they came up with the third national flag of the Confederacy, which was just like the second one with the battle flag up in the upper left corner, the white field. But then they put a wide red stripe, vertical stripe, on the end of the flag. So if it were hanging limp, you'd have this big red part down at the bottom, and it wouldn't be confused as a flag of surrender. I don't know that many of those were ever made, if any were, because by March of 1865, they had a lot more serious problems than what kind of flag they were going to use. But that is the third national flag of the Confederacy. And a friend of ours down in Georgia, boy, the name of Hank, he always gives me a hard time every time I say that. He says, Andrews, you're such a pathetic little junior high school girl cheerleader. That's not the third national flag of the Confederacy. That is the current national flag of the Confederacy. So I stand corrected. That is the current national flag of the Confederacy.
Right. We never surrendered. That's right.
Absolutely.
Hell no.
Confederate government never did officially surrender. No.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, I didn't know that. I know you didn't, Gene, because Gene's still got his damn sword. A week doesn't go by that Gene doesn't kill Yankees. We can't keep him in swords, man. It's running us. We're almost bankrupt by these damn swords. But anyway.
No. Well, Nancy's brought up some good points there. And I've talked enough, and most of our audience is probably asleep already by now. But I'd like to turn it over to her if there's any other points you wanted to bring up about the Confederate government or the start of the Confederacy or some of the individuals that got the government up and running for us. I'd like to turn it over to her, and maybe she can give us some more information on Kentucky. And Kentucky was a real battleground state because they first tried to stay neutral, and then, the Yankees invaded from one direction of the state and the Confederates came in from another. So she's the expert on Kentucky. If you want to go ahead with anything
I wouldn't say that I'm the expert, but I do know that our Confederate governor, I'm trying to think of what his name was. I think it was George Johnson. He was actually killed at the right off the bat at one of the very first battles he was involved in. He was our Confederate elected governor, but the one who had been our governor before he was elected was also a pro-Confederate, but I guess he got kicked out because the state. Actually, Louisville was pretty much occupied by the Yankees immediately, but of course the rest of the state was confused. Some of them were for the South and some were for the North, and that's why we had a lot of partisan activity. But Kentucky never suffered like Missouri did. Missouri really suffered terrible house burnings and murders of supporters of the South. We didn't have much of that. We had raids, and then we had John Hunt Morgan, who came across the state a couple of times, but we didn't have the horror that Missouri suffered with the antipathy that was shown between the so-called loyalists and the rebels.
Yeah. You know, Kentucky and Missouri during this time actually had two governments. They had one that was a U.S. government that was put in place by force by the Yankee military, and they had a popular government that was elected by the people that was pro-Southern. But because they didn't have enough military influence to hold on to the capital city at Frankfort or at Jefferson City in Missouri, the Confederate government was pretty much a government in exile for both Missouri and Kentucky. And yeah. You've always heard about the soldiers that left Kentucky and never got a chance to go back, the Orphan Brigade that fought in the Army of Tennessee and fought all over Tennessee, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and all the way down into Mississippi. They were in part of the Vicksburg campaign down there. So
I think I've been flying that flag of the Orphan Brigade on my back porch when I got the Confederate flag, a couple Confederate flags flying.
Bless your heart.
Yeah, I'm back to the Confederate governor who was, I think, in control when the war started was Beriah McLaughlin, and he's buried in Harrodsburg. His home is there. I think he was sympathetic to the South, and I guess that's how he got demoted. But I think when the Confederates came into Frankfort is when they elected Johnson. I think it's George Johnson. And he was killed right away. He was killed in a battle. I can't think if – I'm not sure. I don't think it was Shiloh. Maybe it was Shiloh.
Well, basically, the same thing happened to Tennessee. Governor Isom G. Harris was governor at the time. And when Lincoln sent the order out after the Confederates in Charleston Harbor defended the harbor against the fleet that Lincoln was sending down there, and they tried and tried and tried to negotiate to get the federal soldiers out of Fort Sumter. Of course, Lincoln wouldn't let them. He knew this was going to be a false flag, and he knew he needed some incident to get the war started to force the Confederate states back into the Union at the point of a gun. So much for democracy and free will of the people. Forget that. Mm-hmm. So when Lincoln sent out the order that states that were still in the Union and demanded that they furnish 75,000 soldiers, an army of 75,000, sent a quota to each state to send their state militias in to serve in the Union Army. Governor Harris fired off a letter to him and said, Tennessee will not furnish one single man for coercion, but 50,000 if necessary to defend our rights and those of our fellow southern states. And he had 70,000 written in at first, and he scratched it out and put 50. He thought 70 was a little over the top. Well, he should have left it, because Tennessee furnished 132,000 men to the Confederate Army.
They suffered a lot, that's for sure. Yeah. Well, you know, I think Kentucky and Missouri both were in the Confederate Congress.
Absolutely.
They were in the Confederate Congress. They a lot of people say, oh, it was a border state. Well, they can call it a border state, but we were. I'm going to certainly after the war, the state of Kentucky went totally southern because
absolutely.
Of the executions that had taken place in 1864. The South was, Kentucky was totally sympathetic to the South after the war was over because of Burbridge executions, which I have followed closely.
Wow.
Well, Missouri was, just like you said, Kentucky, they were trying to be neutral until Fremont, a Yankee officer, came in there and ran it like some kind of dictatorship. And that drove the countryside of Missouri into the Confederate ranks. Now, St. Louis, with so many German immigrants, stayed pretty much pro-Union, as did Kansas City. But all of the counties out in the countryside were very, very much pro-Confederate. And quite a few Confederate units came out of Missouri, and probably some of the most famous were the Jameses and the Youngers, who carried the war on after.
You know what? I say that having done quite a bit of research in Missouri, a lot of the bloodshed that was shed in Missouri was from Kentuckians, absolutely from Kentuckians who went and migrated over. Their families went there in the 1820s, and my ancestor, Dick Yeager, rode with the Quantrell. And I'll tell you something about Jesse James. Jesse James had to be Jesse and Franks. They were, of course, they were known as outlaws. But guess what? They had to be outlaws, because when Jesse James tried to turn himself in and surrender, you know what happened? He got shot. He survived. But that is in Missouri. There was no turning back. There was no surrender. And that is what happened. That's how Quantrell ended up in Kentucky, because the men who rode under Quantrell. Knew they could not surrender in Missouri. No way.
We still had surrendered on Blood River Radio, and you can bet both gonads that Gene the Bitter Ender Andrews ain't never surrendered. That's for damn sure. And neither has Nancy Big Sister Hit. Nancy's got a big old stick. Gene's got his sword. Well, people, thank you a lot for tuning in tonight. This has been one heck of an educating third hour. I love it. And if you will, tune in same time, same place. Next week, that'll be the fourth. The first hour will be CW's coming on. I don't know what we're going to be doing the second hour, but the third hour is going to be the start of our college level white history / Confederate History Month, and you can get a degree. You might even get a bonus flag if you make high enough on your essay. So good night, everybody. Thank you for tuning in.